Yeah, sure. So I think what I'll talk about is the mentality that, you know, kind of provoked me to have that conversation, because it's not about any one guy. I think I respect and admire any founder, you know, knowing what it's like to be on that side of the table. You know, if you're starting a company and you're serious about it, and, you know, he was and is, I think, you know, you have all of my, you know, respect. What concerns me is, you know, as this community starts to grow, you know, you kind of start to get also some, you know, kind of people that, you know, feel like they've been, you know, wrong just because they haven't raised money, which are normal, you know, kind of startup community kind of dynamics. You know, it's in fact harder to raise money in Silicon Valley. Yeah, there's a lot more of it, but guess what? There's a lot more investment grade founders there. So believe me, as someone that's been there, it is harder for you to raise money in Silicon Valley than it is in San Diego if you have a company that deserves to be funded.
Welcome to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. Millard Chan and Andrew Moss launched this podcast to give a voice to the countless founders, angel investors, incubators, supporters, and startup events located in San Diego.
Welcome back to another episode of Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. Andrew, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. It is good to be back. You know, we had a nice little break after Startup Week, and it's good to be back here with you.
Yeah, I'm just so glad we banked so many episodes. So Brittany and Ashoka, I think we did several times triple back-to-back episodes so that we could actually, you know, have a summer break.
Yeah, it was intense, but it was well worth doing. And it's, you know, we have two great guests again back with us that were previously on our podcast, weren't they?
Yeah, actually, two guests that each for their own episodes were two of the most popular ones this year of Startup Talk. So excited. So we are joined today by Brittany Meiling, who is the biotech and startup reporter for the San Diego Business Journal and has been working at that local business magazine since 2014. You can catch her words of wisdom about how to be ready when the press calls on episode 6 of Startup Talk. We are also joined by Ashok Kamal, who is the executive director of Tech Coast Angels San Diego. You can hear all about Ashok's origins as a hip-hop label founder, social entrepreneur, and investor on episode 10 of Startup Talk. Brittany, Ashok, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to be back. I feel honored. I think Brittany and I together are the first repeat guests on the show.
That's right.
So maybe someday it'll be like, you know, Saturday Night Live used to have like the Five Timers Club, Steve Martin, you know, back in the day.
Eventually you'll just get your photo up on this wall here somewhere.
Yeah, nice. Exactly. Yeah. Thanks for having us back. Brittany's episode was one of my favorites. I like learning new things about the people that I often, you know, see in one context, you know, by day, but, you know, their origin stories too. So it's great to be back with all of you.
So the reason why we had this episode is we've dropped 22 episodes as of the time of this recording so far, and we've got so many viewpoints of people all throughout the startup ecosystem within the San Diego, Tijuana mega region startup ecosystem. So we've had a number of entrepreneurs, investors, entrepreneurs that turned into investors, reporters, co-working executive directors. And we've been getting the information out there into the community, but what we wanted to do was actually take a pause, go back to a couple of guests that had such compelling information, and then just, you know, see what's happened in the year since we've last spoken on the podcast.
No, and yeah, we've talked about this before, and you know, it's always good to get an update from the guests that we have on just to see where we are and where we were and see if there has been improvement or weaknesses. And we kind of want to open that up to a discussion and see what you guys have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this podcast is about real talk. And so why don't we start off with the first topic and love to find out from you, Brittany and Ashok, what are some new startups of note within, say, the last 6 to 9 months in the region?
I'll go ahead and jump off on this one. So one of the most interesting startups I wrote about in the last, I think it's been less than 6 months, was a company called Biota. Has anyone heard of Biota?
No.
Okay, that's what I loved about them. They're like this secret company. So Biota is a genomics company that also has a software as a service element. And it's the science is very kind of difficult to explain, especially to the layman. But as far as I understand, the company is sequencing DNA that's found on rocks at oil sites, like where fracking is being done. And they're able to tell basically the oil industry how to better get oil from the rocks at their sites. So, I mean, what they're doing is actually really valuable, and they already have dozens of large oil and gas company customers. And this prior CTO of Halliburton has joined the company as the CSO. So pretty impressive company.
And so are they looking to take those microorganisms and use it for other purposes that they find around these oil?
Basically, they create a software service that constantly can monitor oil sites.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty cool.
I didn't realize Dick Cheney was back in the fold. I think we were all wondering what the hell was he doing when he wasn't shooting his friends in the hunting accident. So a different CEO that followed Dick Cheney to mm-hmm. take it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So have they been funded recently? Because you wrote about them.
Mm-hmm. And they have been funded, but they didn't share any details. They were actually pretty pretty closed off on details about who their investors were and how much they raised. He shared some information with me off the record that was astounding. In terms of their progress.
Interesting. So they were secretive about it. So yep. We don't know if it's a combination of local or out-of-state investors or...
Nope.
Cool.
Can I ask a follow-up question to Brittany?
Sure, again, absolutely.
I love learning from her in this context. Yeah. How do you handle someone that's being, you know, kind of, if not squirrely, just, you know, close to the chest, even if it's because they're required, you know, to still make the story, mm-hmm. I guess, robust for yourself? What are your tactics?
Well, first of all, just getting them to share those details with me off the record, then I feel confident that it's a company worth writing about. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's always better if I can get information I can share with the audience. They understand the impact and the size and the promise of a company I'm writing about. But honestly, like if someone won't share anything with me, not even off the record, I generally don't write about them. I may interview them and then walk away from that story and decide not to write about it. I hope that I can get the trust of someone that they'll share something with me just for my own background.
Yeah, it must be hard to write a story if someone doesn't want to tell you anything. There's not really a story there at all.
Yeah. You know, you just have to, when someone's like, oh, we're growing 300% every week or whatever, you're like, what does that even mean? I can't, you know, I need more numbers than that.
It's a good tip. So startups, don't waste Brittany's time. I mean, only approach when you're ready to share something material.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's how it should go, right? But there's some companies just want that PR, just want that notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
But then... You've got a good BS meter, right, Brittany? And so if they're not the real deal, you'll talk to them and just won't write about them, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the thing. I have to understand that these small businesses and startups, they desperately need a platform sometimes. And so I understand why they're pitching me, but I've got plenty of ideas and companies coming in to write about that I don't need to write about someone unless they're willing to be pretty forthright with me about their progress.
Makes sense.
And sure, on the other hand, like if they come to you too early or they don't want to tell you anything, they can earn themselves a bad reputation with you and you might not want to go talk to them. It might be like the boy who cried wolf too many times, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's happened a good number of times. So,
sure.
Yeah.
So how about on the TCA front, Ashok? What are some interesting startups of note?
So I guess I can kind of go multiple, you know, ends of the spectrum. I think one deal that we did do that I'm really excited about is actually a local company that I know Brittany spoke with recently called Dodo OmniData. And I'll let her talk about some of the details in, you know, an upcoming feature. But I, you know, had an aha moment seeing them pitch. Basically, they use synthetic DNA to store data. It's a substitute for magnetic tape, for example. So in this world of, you know, increasingly big data sets where we are decreasingly able to store it all, and that problem's only going to continue, you know, to compound exponentially. They've figured out a way to store information in DNA. So basically you upload and then download information from DNA, and they've done it in a laboratory. Obviously scaling it economically is the next challenge, but the technology has already been sort of proven in the lab. It's a great CEO named Jim Linton, and it's, you know, one of those spaces that is, you know, going to have a significant impact on the future, because for us to continue to collect and analyze, you know, and use data, we have to find better ways to be able to manage it. And, you know, for example, you know, they talk about how in, you know, a pool of DNA the size of your pinky finger, you can store, you know, an entire library. So I think that company is really exciting because it's totally disruptive. You know, it's got a great management team. And if it works, it's going to be, you know, $1 billion plus company. And it was a recent TCA deal led by Jeff Friedman, our chair of life sciences.
That's awesome. And for the listeners that don't know much about this, there's been a fair amount of work done at Harvard University and other academic institutions of using DNA as a data storage medium. So that sounds pretty cool.
Sorry, I'll just jump in here. It was actually one of the most fascinating companies I've talked to in months and months, Dodo. I just wrote about them. It's not published yet, but it's coming out in the next edition. And I just got a preview of it, and it's on the front page. My editors thought it was a fascinating company. So I'm really excited to see where they go with it.
Congratulations.
Great. Yeah, that's great.
Let me ask you a question. What's the percentage of startup stories that wind up on the front page of the Business Journal?
It's funny, right now it's supposed to be its own section. And so, you know, the idea was that all of the startup stories would go on page 8. But increasingly, those are some of the best stories that we have for the week. And so they want to pull them for the front page. So
That's pretty cool.
You're seeing it a lot more often. And pretty soon, we're going to stop only putting startup stories on the startup page. So you'll start seeing them throughout the publication.
That's awesome.
So I'm not done yet because, like I said, I wanted to kind of add some variety, if you don't mind. But the last three TCA deals, Dodo was, I think, you know, four back, were all software, which is interesting to me and included consumer-facing software. One is Group Solver, which I think is a really exciting B2B SaaS company that has been around town just plugging away. It's an example of a company that if you've tracked it for a while, you just are impressed because with or without funding, they just continue to make progress. And as an investor, that's something you never want your funding to be the only inflection point for the company, right? You want to see that they are succeeding on their own and, you know, either get on the bus or, you know, you miss the bus. So Group Solver, which Mill has been involved with, you know, I think is actually one of our biggest deals of the year and just officially closed. I'm so excited about them. It's a, you know, basically intelligent business surveying software as a service. And then we closed out the CourseKey round, which is another company that's been, you know, downtown, you know, sort of rock star ed tech company. And more recently, a company called Keepsake that's a SMS-based digital journal for parents and their children. So, you know, we are starting to do a lot more high-tech, you know, software apps and, you know, other kind of software as a service companies at TCA. Like I said, the last three, and these are early stage to mid stage in the case of Group Solver companies. So the diversity of deal flow, I think, that we're looking at right now and actually funding is really exciting to me.
So are you seeing, so Brittany and Ashok, a broad range of startups getting funding from seed stage, Series A, Series B?
I'm seeing, at least since I've been doing this about 3 years now, I'm seeing a lot more software companies be funded, early stage funding, in the past year, I think, than before. But they're very, very small rounds, you know, in comparison to you know, life science and even genomics companies. The software companies are, you know, 200,000 to less than a million generally.
Yep.
And is that a big change for the region? Software companies getting funded over here as opposed to life sciences?
If, you know, I think both me and Ashok are new enough, so that's kind of hard to answer that question. Like I said, over the 3 years, I've definitely seen a lot more this past year in software. So that is new. Or maybe just the fact that we're hearing about it is new. You know, a lot of times these kind of deals go on under the radar, and now we actually have people writing about startups, not just me, but other reporters in the area that might be just now picking up on this news.
So What's the combination of sources of funding for these software startups? Are they local angel investors, local VCs, VCs that are out of the city?
I primarily see local angel deals and VCs from out of the area.
Why do you think the reason is there's not a lot of VCs investing in companies here in San Diego, and we're getting more from out of area VCs, I guess.
Open a can of worms with that question.
But you can't have a lot of VCs investing if there are not a lot of VCs. So the question is, why aren't there a lot of VCs?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of opinions on this. I think the opinion I've heard the most is that we haven't had too many big consumer-facing software successes in town. So if you're talking about software or tech VCs, without having those very well-known unicorn-type companies, you don't have a lot of VCs that are setting up shop here. We do have a good amount of biotech and life science VCs here.
That basically answers my question.
Yeah.
And what challenges do you have from covering both the startup and biotech scenes at San Diego Business Journal?
Well, actually, me and Ashok were talking about this recently. We have a pretty small staff at the Business Journal, and as you guys know, there's a lot going on in biotech, and there's a lot going on in the startup world. And to be really good at your job, you really have to be entrenched in the community. You have to be out with your face in front of other people all the time, showing up at events and small networking gatherings, things like that. And so when you have to split your time between two different communities, you can do either justice, you know. So if I'm writing more about startups for a while, I'll get pushback from the biotech community being like, why am I not seeing more news in the areas relevant to me? And when I'm writing about biotech, I hear the same from the startup side. So far, I just try to not write about everything. It's impossible to write about everything, and just try and write about things that have been missed by others and things that I think are impactful.
All right, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. On the TCA front, Ashok, what are the latest developments at TCA? It could be personnel, it could be funding, which you talked a little bit about before. Any kind of new and exciting developments for impacting this ecosystem in a positive way?
Yeah, I think all of the above. We're doing deals, we're open for business, and we're active as we have been, now for, the whole time that I've been there, and even, beyond. Good companies, always, we're looking to meet with them. I think...
Has there been a shift in the opinion from the community about TCA over the time that you've been executive director?
You'd have to ask the community. So, I'm a member of the community, but I'm not the voice of the community. So I hope that, with or without, me, we've made progress, over, and again, I've only been here a little over a year, but I know that there have been people working really hard, beyond that. Dean Rosenberg, for example, who actually Brittany also just broke the story that he's the new incoming president of Tech Coast Angels. And people like him have been pounding the pavement, in the community from downtown to Los Angeles, for, years now, and he's a, serial successful founder who was funded by TCA, had a big exit, has invested in a good number of local companies. So I think when you have people like that, that are representing, crafting, kind of the organization, it's inevitable that it's going to be positive in terms of the evolution.
That's absolutely an amazing development, Ashok. Yeah. Someone that's been previously funded by TCA, had a successful exit, acquired by a public company, mm-hmm. and then joining the ranks and then moving into a management role and then taking on the leadership role, that's amazingly good.
Yep.
Bodes well.
Absolutely, because, ultimately we're dealing with entrepreneurs, and kings deal with kings and founders deal with founders. That's because you have empathy, from the other side. It's really important in this particular context. So, I think good things are happening. To be specific about some of them right now, we're, full bore into our Quick Pitch 2017, which has become, largely thanks to Amy Vavrunic, who was a guest on your show. And I also learned some really cool things about her entrepreneurial past from that episode. Even though I work with her every day, but I didn't know about some of her history.
She's a serial entrepreneur.
Totally.
With exits as well.
Visionary, of in, what she has done as an entrepreneur and, now as an investor and as our chair of Quick Pitch, which is October 5th at Qualcomm. We're now in the phase, so to give people an idea of how the sequence and the structure for Quick Pitch works. This year, we've partnered and we will continue to with San Diego Venture Group, consolidating our Quick Pitch in what they used to call Pitch Fest, which was their December pitch competition. And, it just made no sense for us to both be doing our own events when we're good friends, literally and figuratively, and we can pool the cash prize, which is now going to be $50,000 cash prize. We can pool, the outreach for applications. So we broke the record again this year with over 160 online applications. We can pool the mentors, the judges. So it's all kind of now one family.
That's really an interesting development too. So it's like gone to the wayside are these fiefdoms between two important funding groups in town, right? Or funding lobbying groups.
It's totally pointless. I mean, San Diego's big enough to matter, but not big enough to have silos. If this community, you ask about the community, let's say with a big C, wants to continue to grow and prosper, it's got to work together. Luckily, I think the culture is to be collaborative. And, this is a good example of the individuals involved and, therefore the organizational character that the individuals sort of, foster. So this year is going to be better than last year, which was better than the previous 10 years. And, there's going to be a really great pool of companies. Tomorrow, actually, is our semifinal. So we picked 30 from the online applications to come in. They'll present their, you know, basically quick pitch. Then the judging panels, which are composed of San Diego Venture Group and TCA board members, will choose the final 10 based on a scorecard that will actually be the 10 that present at Quick Pitch in October. And then between tomorrow and October, the coaches assigned to the companies will help them sort of refine their final pitch. So it's a really exciting time. We have an incredible pool of companies. I mean, I can just say, even compared to last year, which was one of the first sort of major initiatives I got involved with when I got here, just by time with Quick Pitch.
I think the big difference is this move towards fundable companies for Quick Pitch, as opposed to just companies that were just good for a show.
Yeah, well, that shift happened last year, and you know the proof was in the pudding when the company that won Quick Pitch ended up raising more than $9 million, led by TCA, within like 8 months. So Damn. You know that set the precedent. So this year, of course, that's sort of the lens that we see.
Echo Labs.
Echo Laboratory.
Eugene Cho was a guest on an earlier episode.
He was. I mean, who hasn't been on this show? It's like, if you haven't been on this show, you don't exist. You
know? It's the who's who of San Diego, obviously.
It truly has become that. But yeah, Eugene's actually a judge this year at Quick Pitch. So again, he, you know, gives back, and we continue to just kind of recycle, you know, the goodwill and the talent, whether it's Dean coming into the presidency of TCA or Eugene coming into, you know, giving back immediately as a judge at Quick Pitch. So that, you know, kind of is now one of our major priorities. And I, you know, would encourage everybody, you can go to our website, it's quickpitchsd.com, and, you know, learn all about. We just actually this morning announced who the 8 judges are, including Eugene. So there's 7 other really cool folks, you know, ranging from Allison from Seed San Diego to David Coates from Correlation Ventures. Dean is also one of our judges, but we're really excited about what this year is going to be.
That's cool. I'm really excited as well. So, Brittany, what's interesting, we've had a diversity of people on the podcast, as I've said, but actually the largest pool of talent that we've had is women in STEM. And so you recently wrote an article about tips for female founders and how to attract venture capital. So we'd love to kind of get your thoughts on that situation in general.
Mm-hmm. That was actually kind of a difficult article for me to write because it's difficult to write that without coming off a little bit patronizing, I think, to the women founders.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, we heard at a panel, I think it was either sponsored by Athena or maybe put on by Athena, but there was a few women, including the ones I interviewed on the panel, that had mentioned they thought one of the problems they were having to securing venture capital was that they were developing products that were targeted specifically towards women. Those were things that, you know, things that they were passionate about. But when you're pitching to a group full of men a product targeted towards women, sometimes the message doesn't get across, and so the investors can't understand exactly, you know, what you're trying to do and the target you're trying to reach. So yeah, I when I asked them for tips on, you know, how were you able to get around that? How were you able to get your messaging across? They told me what they thought was most successful for them. But those tips were put together in a little box in the article. And I did get some feedback from women founders that they didn't so much like that kind of feedback.
Well, was it true, though?
Well, so do you remember?
If following those tips help those founders result in actually getting funded, mm-hmm. well, then you get a point to that.
Yeah, that is, it was true in those instances. And the women that right. I talked to that I didn't quote said the same thing. But when Sheryl Sandberg wrote her book, Lean In, she got a lot of pushback for kind of teaching women how to deal with biases in a way that is almost like you have to kind of have to bend to the biases that exist. And so the people said, you know, why should you have to change anything about you just to come off maybe non-threatening to other men? Or maybe, you know, I think one of the tips for women founders was that they should try and relate something to the investor's like family, wife or daughter. And a lot of people didn't like that tip. There's a lot of reasons for that. So it was a difficult subject.
Well, as a former founder myself that has raised money, it's, you know, whatever it takes to actually get the message of the mission through to the investors that could result in capital in, why not?
Mm-hmm. And creating affinities and familiarity. So, for example, like a pro tip for raising money is to go to the office of the investor and notice what might be of interest to them. They've got like a Boston Red Sox placard or a picture of their family or their dog, and then create, you know, sort of
rapport
around that. So that's just a contextual, you know, kind of example of something that men are told to do as well.
Absolutely. I think how is that any different?
A cottage conversation that comes out of these articles is, why are women criticizing other women that are trying to, you know, kind of be candid about how to exist in this world that's unfair, that I think, you know, as men, you know, we're responsible for these biases and need to apologize for it. And, you know, I'm sorry. I've never engaged in that, I don't think, inappropriate behavior, but I've been around people that even have been in TechCrunch recently in the news that are being called out, rightfully so. I never saw it from them, let's say, but you know, they've done it and now they're dealing with the consequences and they deserve that. But I think, you know, we have to take responsibility and make changes. At the same time, it does concern me a little bit that, you know, you have, you know, kind of women making it harder for each other while men are already doing that.
Well, I think some of the problem is just the fact that I wrote about it. It acknowledges that creating products targeted towards women is a barrier to getting funding. So now some founders might see that and think, well, then I'm not going to create a product that's targeted towards women, especially something like what Dari is doing. Women's reproductive health is very difficult to get financing. So what happens is then those markets are underserved. And so you don't really want to perpetuate that problem by bringing to light, hey, if you do this, you may not get funding.
I see a flaw in that logic. So it may, in an absolute sense, be limiting you, but the riches are in the niches. So for that particular founder X, that may actually be the better play than, say, founder X trying to go and create a esports platform. So that's, you know, another way to think about it.
Interesting.
Classical entrepreneurship is find where there's a need and the gap and then serve that market.
Yep. And if you, you know, eat your own dog food, you know, then you're more likely to be able to have that. You know, you always hear about product market fit, but founder product fit is super important too. And, you know, you're better off kind of focusing on your unique founder product fit. That's how you get invested.
Here's a topic both you might be able to talk about is the Evo Nexus closing downtown. What happened to those companies after it closed?
Take it away, Brittany.
Well, actually, give us a little context about what Evo Nexus is and then what led to them closing down.
So Evo Nexus is an incubator. That's been around for quite a long time. The first one was opened in 2010, and the original location was in UTC. And then I believe it was just a couple of years later, they opened the downtown location for Evo Nexus. And I don't know if this was planned to be this way, but what happened was that a lot of the software companies went downtown, and a lot of the hardware companies and life science companies were in UTC. And that carried on for a number of years. And then kind of it came as a surprise to a lot in the community. They made an announcement recently that they were going to be closing the downtown office and then bringing all those companies over to the UTC location, which did just get, it's a new building. So it's a little bit bigger than the old building, and it's remodeled, and it's a lot more trendy, kind of like the downtown office was, with shared spaces. So they wanted to kind of bring everyone together.
Oh, so they were, so Evo Nexus was willing to accommodate all the displaced companies from downtown?
Well, there were a number that were graduating anyway. Right. And the ones that were graduating didn't come over to UTC.
Sure.
And then I have heard, no one told me directly, but I have heard as I've been around town that there were a number of people downtown that were really disappointed in the move and decided to stay downtown anyway. So.
Sure. That makes sense, because it's quite a bit of distance away.
Mm-hmm. Some of these companies, you know, their employees and founders live downtown, and so moving to UTC was just not an option for them.
And so what's the impact, actually, in general? It seems like, sorry, beyond just the Evo Nexus closing, in general, there seems to be an explosion of not necessarily incubators, but co-working spaces all over San Diego. So Downtown Works, WeWork, Union Co-work, Desk Hub, a whole bunch of others. And so Any thoughts on what's causing that explosion of co-working space and if that's good or not for the community?
So it's funny timing. We're actually about to publish our first list. You know how we do the book of lists at the Business Journal?
Yeah.
We added a co-working to that list this year. And we've really refined that, made sure that all of the co-working companies that we had on the list are still open and operating. And then we created a map to see, you know, where a lot of these were concentrated. And there is actually a surprising number in Encinitas, and then kind of the rest downtown, and then there's quite a few, you know, in between those areas. But, you know, if there is an explosion in co-working in any city, that generally it's kind of a trend everywhere because it's a popular real estate play. But it also shows kind of a entrepreneurship trend in a city. And a lot of these spaces, I've toured, I think, almost all of them, and a lot of them do house solo entrepreneurs and small startups. So it's a good sign for the startup community.
But do you see the supply fitting the demand? If there's such an explosion, is there enough people wanting to go into these places that they're able to stay open? Or
yeah, so far it seems that way. We collected data for our list that was occupancy numbers basically, and it looks like a good number of them are getting plenty of seats, people in the seats. A couple have closed down since opening, but that happens in the course of any business, and I think the ones that did close down, I understand the reasons that they did. So far we haven't really seen like a boom and bust where there's too many. But we did have someone last year, actually Greg McKee at Connect, made a public statement for a story I was writing at the end of the year, and his prediction for next year was that there was going to be some closures and because there was too much co-working popping up in San Diego. So we'll see if that happens.
Well, I mean, cream rises at the top. So Desk Hub, which is where I mostly work out of, has expanded, during that time. And then to your question, Andrew, about supply and demand. Well, demand just went up with this Evo Nexus, closing of their office because, as Brittany mentioned, some of these founders and their teams and their just infrastructure is based downtown. So what's unique sort of, I think, about San Diego is you have these, now I'd really say, three segments of the startup scene, from North County, pure North County, like where I'm at in Encinitas, to downtown, and then in between, the UTC kind of area. So it's not a great fit for everybody to necessarily move from downtown to, say, Encinitas or vice versa. So now some of these companies inevitably are going to go into Downtown Works or Desk Hub or WeWork or one of these other, spaces. I think it's good that there's at least capacity, kind of right now, because clearly there was density forming downtown San Diego, which is a good thing. Kind of a density is one of the key, kind of drivers of a startup community's success over time. And I think in the short term, obviously, it's a bit of a shakeup for Evo to move, but I'm sure they had good reasons for it. And some companies are probably benefiting from, moving into UTC. But in the short term, again, it's a change. So as they say, never waste the opportunity of a good crisis. I'm sure new leaders will step up, whether it's the co-working spaces or the kind of work that Andy White's doing with the Collaboratory downtown that I think will substitute a lot of the services, the mentorship, the, kind of serendipitous, kind of collisions that are created, in those Evo type of environments. So in the midterm, I think, this community is mature enough now that it'll quickly gather itself and show its resiliency.
What one thing I'd like to see, though, downtown right now, Evo Nexus was kind of the gathering point. Actually, there was a time when there wasn't like so much security at the downtown Evo Nexus. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to have that pass to get up the elevator, and people would just kind of show up and hang out. And now with them being gone, or even when they got that security, there's not really a place for people to gather, startup people from all of these different organizations. So it'd be nice to see some of the co-working spaces, or maybe even Startup San Diego, get their own place where they could have a little bit more community events.
Speaking of Startup San Diego, how much presence did you have at Startup Week this year?
Oh, I was all over. was that a show?
I was just thinking, like, we were all so involved that we had to take 2 months off from this show and, counter ourselves, right? I mean, wasn't that kind of the common theme at the beginning? It's like...
Yeah, for sure. It was at the same week as the bio conference.
Right.
Because I cover biotech, I was also splitting my time between bio and Startup Week. And I was on a panel at Startup Week about talking to the media. And then I went to several sessions all over the downtown kind of map area, and then hung out at the headquarters quite a while to meet up with people. I was really impressed with the event this year. I thought that it was really well organized. For having to have the talks at several different locations, they made managing that, navigating that, very easy. And I thought the content was good this year.
Yeah, the way they were able to do that is just have a horde of volunteers. Mm-hmm. Could not have been done without all those volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you see a market difference between this year and last year, 2017 versus 2016 at Startup Week?
Maybe it was hard to see attendance-wise because the events were so spread out.
Right.
But I did see a difference in terms of the organization and how professional the event was being led. Definitely more polished this year. And so I'm excited to see what next year brings.
Did it lead for you a number of new article ideas coming from Startup Week, or...?
I think I think I got a handful of them. I wish I would have gotten a little bit more. But the thing is, a lot of people who attend Startup Week are really, really early stage.
Yeah,
so they weren't companies I'd be writing about per se, but I got some kind of trend story ideas.
I think I saw a marked difference in the variety and diversity of content this year. Mm-hmm. You know, just the number of tracks, the different formats. You know, we had our Meet the Angels panel, which we had great attendance for. It was like over 100 people, I think, you know, came to that event.
There were people standing.
It was amazing. You know, so there were events like that that kind of were carryover from the prior year, maybe new faces on them. I personally was mostly involved in the keynote with Jason Calacanis. So, you know, he's a guy that I know from New York, and he just
wrote a book called Angel. That was an amazing
get. He was, you know, Jason as always, you know, and a great, you know, kind of local connection was he had invested in a company called Rapify that's a, you know, kind of all-star San Diego startup. So it wasn't hard for me to convince him to come and, you know, do this keynote, you know, for Startup Week. But I was just impressed overall by, you know, kind of, the, as Brittany said, organization, you know, of some of the new leaders that have stepped up, like Harrison and Nicole and Hannah in the Startup San Diego, you know, kind of, you know, management, as folks like Austin and Neil and Andy, you know, deliberately have kind of passed the baton and, you know, succession planning, you know, kind of, and again, building the community here. So overall, for me, it was, you know, really a wonderful event to be a part of, and just to enjoy also as a community member.
I do want to add, for people who aren't familiar, Startup San Diego has a very small budget. Actually, of course, their documents are public, and I'm a reporter, so I looked at their tax documents, and they have very little money. No one gets paid. So, and they managed to get together hundreds of volunteers to put on this huge event. And so I think, especially when you consider the resources, they did a fabulous job.
Watch out, Donald Trump. Brittany is on top of your...
I've got your tax documents.
Your 990.
So I remember like a year and a half ago reading about a company, I think that wrote either a LinkedIn or a Medium post about why he started this company in Silicon Valley but moved it down to San Diego. And recently, in the last couple of weeks or so, there was this small company, small little startup that wrote an article or a Medium post about why he started in San Diego but decided to move his startup up to the Bay Area. And I noticed that Ashok, you had actually gone back and forth with that guy on social media. And so could you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So I think what I'll talk about is the mentality that, you know, kind of provoked me to have that conversation, because it's not about any one guy. I think I respect and admire any founder, you know, knowing what it's like to be on that side of the table. You know, if you're starting a company and you're serious about it, and, you know, he was and is, I think, you know, you have all of my, you know, respect. What concerns me is, you know, as this community starts to grow, you know, you kind of start to get also some, you know, kind of people that, you know, feel like they've been, you know, wronged just because they haven't raised money, which are normal, you know, kind of startup community kind of dynamics. You know, it's in fact harder to raise money in Silicon Valley. Yeah, there's a lot more of it, but guess what? There's a lot more investment grade founders there. So believe me, as someone that's been there, it is harder for you to raise money in Silicon Valley than it is in San Diego if you have a company that deserves to be funded.
Right.
So I think, you know, my concern is basically that, you know, people that might not have things go their way as quickly or, you know, kind of as, you know, as rapidly as they want, you know, kind of outsource the blame. And when people are pointing fingers, you know, especially, you know, using questionable, you know, sort of arguments, you know, I think not good for the community.
Yeah, one argument I have an issue with myself is, you know, in looking at the back and forth thread is, you know, when somebody's not able to successfully raise money, to blame the system or blame the city as opposed to looking inward at, you know, what were the deficiencies in them not securing funding, right?
Right, yeah. And so, again, you know, it's not going to be necessarily easier to just go to Silicon Valley. And then, you know, when, you know, you feel like, for example, we were just talking about Startup Week. I mean, I think in this article, you know, it was called a sham. I mean, anybody who was involved, you know, kind of can say that Startup Week's not a sham. And so when you make a you know, claim like that, it totally discredits, you know, everything else you're saying,
right?
Because it just shows the frame of mind that you're coming from. So, you know, therefore, it's fairly easy to kind of go up in the line of the different complaints and say, you know, again, you know, look inward before outward. And the reality is, you know, kind of whining is not going to get you what you want. You know, that's, you know, sort of as a founder, you know, that's sort of part of the table stakes, is you have to be able to take the rejections and use them constructively. I mean, you look at some of the people in the community, like Cody Barbo, who I actually met with this morning and, you know, is working on some exciting stuff. I mean, this guy is just positive, you know, kind of just constructive and just, you know, is onward and upward, you know, kind of all the time. And that's the kind of person that you want to bank, because your startup, even if you succeed, is going to be a constant, constant experience of disappointments and failures, you know, small ones, sometimes big ones. But to get to that ultimate success, you know, where you build a great company, you're going to have to deal with a lot of setbacks along the way, and complaining is not the way to deal with it. Mm-hmm.
That's right. So Cody Barbo was the co-founder and former CEO of Industry. He was an earlier guest on the podcast, and he had recently been separated from the company he co-founded. Don't quite exactly know the reason why, but he was quite public, and I was so shocked on mm-hmm. posting about it on LinkedIn and other social media about, you know, his thoughts and feelings at the time, but not trying to keep it all closed in, but staying
so
very
upfront.
Positive.
Yeah. I think it shows his character, though. It shows great character, and it shows why he was a great CEO up to that point. And then, you know, especially about that guy who wrote that LinkedIn post you were going back and forth with, maybe that's a reason why investors didn't really like him. They saw his character and saw, maybe no, I can't back that horse. And I think someone like Cody can definitely get back up there and do it again.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And he is. So you'll all hear about that very soon. I can tell you, I literally met with him a few hours ago, and it's an exciting company. And I think he just has proven himself to be a class act that just, you know, stays constructive and positive. And, you know, that's what it takes to be a successful founder. So hopefully that's the kind of takeaway from all of this. You know, I want all these companies to succeed, you know, but don't make it harder for yourself than it already is, because trust me, it's super hard as is.
That's right, Ashok. Brittany, you're about?
Oh, I was just going to make the point that it's not terribly unusual what happened with Cody. You know, when they just got that institutional funding round not that long ago. And Cody, he was so upfront and transparent about what happened. And he took away some lessons from that as well, that, you know, when you're a very young, still pretty green founder, there is a time when you do hand over the reins to someone with more experience. And I'm pretty sure that's what he made clear happened at Industry. And so hopefully from here on, he'll take those lessons with him.
So, Brittany, you deal with facts, obviously, as as a respected reporter in this market. And so how often do you see things like that where people are just disgruntled about where it's funding or the way they've been treated? And 'cause I know you speak to a lot of CEOs.
Yeah.
Or you don't write a story about them so that you get them disgruntled. I mean, that's got to happen, right?
Yeah, they both happen. And the truth is, I talk to a whole lot of people I don't end up writing about. So there's been a lot. But I think it's pretty common. It's human nature. I can't remember if Ashok said this to me or maybe... I'm sorry, the other Dean Rosenberg might have said this. When you're a founder, you have to... be confronted with something that's very personal to you, or when someone maybe calls, you know, your baby ugly. And so, you know, no matter what, it's human to have that reaction of maybe casting the blame on others and maybe hoping that it's not really your company, that there's other reasons why you weren't funded. And so I think it's very human, very normal for that reaction to happen. And sure, we want to see founders that don't, you know, react that way. But I think it's going to be pretty common.
I will say, I think it's healthy to have a dialogue, you know, kind of, and be constructively critical of, you know, I mean, we're in San Diego, right? So this is our house, you know, we're focused here. And there certainly are things that I think, you know, as the San Diego startup community grows, you know, in terms of diversity, in terms of dealing with some of the fragmentation now that's, you know, becoming more and more fragmented, maybe between, say, like the three geographic, you know, hubs that we have. Those are all important things, you know, to talk about. But be solution oriented. I mean, that's what an entrepreneur is. Breathe in problems, exhale solutions. If we don't treat the community that way, then it can't be entrepreneurial.
But I will say that can be a conversation. Someone can bring up something that is a challenge, and someone else can bring the solution. And that's kind of what happened with the dialogue that you had with the founder. And so I want to hear more people air their complaints. I think that's what makes any community or business or whatever stronger, is to acknowledge the things about it that are weak and then get people working on the solution.
So we talked about this on the last time you were on the podcast, Brittany, about how people talk about the successes but kind of brush either the failures or the challenges under the rug. So in the, you know, half year or so since we last spoke, has that come out in the open a little bit more? People talk about the challenges or the failures in a way to kind of help lift this community ecosystem?
I think I still don't really see it from the startup organizations that are meant to support and grow the startup community, because they have such a marketing mindset that I think that there's a fear to ever put anything out there that might be perceived negatively. However, the more that founders get involved and people who are more maybe not at the leadership level, those are the ones that are starting to step up and kind of air those complaints. And I think that's a good thing.
That's awesome. So as we wrap up this episode, any final parting thoughts, Brittany or Ashok?
I think we covered it pretty well, and nothing comes to mind.
Again, you know, just for me, I guess I'm hitting my anniversary, you know, kind of 1 year of really being like full bore, you know, kind of in San Diego. And I'm more excited and optimistic about San Diego's startup community now than I was even 6 months ago. So I just think it's a great time where you have fascinating, you know, unique spaces. You talked about, you know, Baja and, you know, that relationship, I think just continues to strengthen. You know, I think we have unique industries. We talked a little bit about, you know, the area that I would call IOD, the Internet of DNA, which is this intersection of software and genomics that I think San Diego can and will lead in. And just the general, I think, zeitgeist of the startup, you know, just climate here, where you have the Startup San Diego's and San Diego Startup Week that are just exploding and getting world-class people here, and you have more companies that are raising, you know, seed 2 and series A rounds, and you have more, you know, founders that are doing it for the second and third time, and you have more support organizations like CDI, you know, and Ryan Cooter's Techstars Anywhere that are, you know, coming aboard. So I think just across the board, there's a lot, you know, of positive momentum happening, and there's always going to be setbacks along the way, but that's the nature of startups, baby. You know, you got to take, you know, a step back and then take 3 steps forward. And, you know, that's what's happening, I think, micro and macro in San Diego today.
Excellent. So how can people reach out to you, Ashok?
I'm on the Twitter and the LinkedIn, you know, so Twitter's AK_LaunchLeader. I try to respond to any, you know, contacts on either of those platforms. You know, Ashok@techhostangels.com is my main email. You'll catch me in the community sometimes at events. Tonight we have one at Outside, which is a company I invested in called Nomad Stories. I'll be over there, you know, talking about digital nomads, you know, kind of around the world and, you know, kind of that whole millennial lifestyle. So I'm always, you know, looking to build and meet with other good people in the community. So feel free to hit me up.
It's hard not to run into a show.
So Brittany, if there are executive CEOs and founders out there that won't be written about, how can people find you?
I do really want to encourage people to reach out to me directly. You do not need a PR company to contact a reporter. So if there's something that you think needs to be written about, whether it's your company or a trend or something that you just think needs some attention in the startup community, you can reach me literally everywhere. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, Twitter. My email is public and on the San Diego Business Journal website. It's bmiling@sdbj.com. So hope to hear from you.
And if you want to reach out to us, dear listener, please rate and review us on iTunes. If you enjoyed this episode and want to encourage people to find this Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew, you can hit us up, Twitter @StartupTalkPod. Hit me up personally @MillardYChan. Email us @StartupTalkPodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on our website, StartupTalkPodcast.com. Well, that wraps up another awesome episode of Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew.
Let's get started.
Hey, folks, please subscribe to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew on iTunes and rate and review us. It helps other people find this podcast. This episode was produced by Millard Chan and Andrew Moss. Our sound editor is Lee Liang. Additional voices from Mindy Nguyen. Our theme music is Good Times by Poddington Bear from soundofpicture.com. Our podcast Sherpa is Charles Wilchett.